You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Let's fill up the tank here in Porterville. It's a small town just north of Bakersfield. But really, you could do this just about anywhere. In sprawling Southern California, Central California too, known for its car culture, it seems like there's a gas station on every corner. But for how long? Last year, Governor Gavin Newsom banned the sale of new gas-powered cars in California by 2035.
I had more questions than answers. I was like, what? I was like, wow, okay. That's a bold statement.
That's Taha Saleh. He owns this gas station in Porterville. With this impending deadline, he's seen the value of his business plummet.
I'm for whatever will make, you know, our world more sustainable. The only concern I have is, you know, my livelihood is a concern.
Thousands of car dealers, mechanics, and gas station owners like Saleh are all trying to figure out what this mandate means for them. KCRW's Kaylee Wells explains what life in California might look like without new gas-powered cars and just how realistic that vision is.
Let's start with someone whose job is to dream up what LA will look like in the future. Chris Hawthorne is the city's chief design officer. He says, for one thing, our power infrastructure will be a lot less visible in 15 years.
There's less of a distinction between I'm in the city, I'm doing something, I'm now going to go to a gas station and I'm gonna put gas in my car. Starting with your garage, starting with your driveway, starting with the home residential setting, and then whether it's your workplace, whether it's a shopping mall, whether it's charging infrastructure on the street or in a charging station that looks superficially a little bit like a gas station, that you'll be able to charge your car or your e-bike or your scooter at all of these different places, and that you will begin to integrate this technology and this infrastructure into more types of architecture than has been the case.
In other words, some of LA's gas stations could keep selling gas as the used gas car market continues, and some, Hawthorne says, could turn into public park space. As cars still take a couple hours for any meaningful charge, the rest might become a place to eat a meal or watch a movie. It sounds good, sure. I mean, I'll take a park instead of a gas station. But Gil Tall says there are a lot of obstacles between us and this electrified world. He's director of the Plug-in Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Center at UC Davis, which means his job is studying just how feasible this all-electric driving force is.
If we think about barriers, the main barriers is infrastructure, then supply, and then the third thing is this collaboration with the other states, because we cannot succeed as an island.
So let's start with infrastructure. The city of LA has more commercial electric vehicle chargers than any other city in the country, at just over 10,000, but that's in a city with millions of registered cars. It helps that homeowners can install chargers in their garages, but most Angelenos rent.
We will need to install many chargers for garage orphans, in a way, for people who live in apartments, what we call MUDs, multi-unit dwellers, and for people who rent and cannot install a charger in their home and so on.
But even after they're installed, there's the second obstacle, supply. We'll need the solar panels and wind turbines to power them all, and the technology to store that energy when the sun sets and the wind stops blowing. That's even as California's grid is already strained during increasingly hot summers. And on top of all that, this is still just California. Nevada and Arizona don't have the same mandate, and their car dealerships are just a couple hours away.
It won't work if it's going to be California alone. If we will be able to buy a cheap gasoline car in Nevada and bring it back to California, then the 100% goal is we're not going to meet this goal.
The 100% goal is to have every car on California's roads be electric powered. Tall says in the past 3 years, less than 10% of new cars sold are electric.
100% is a good political and policy goal, but they probably will have to compromise a little bit. It's better than saying, oh, actually, we're planning for 93%. It doesn't sound right, but that's probably what's going to happen.
Dave Greiner isn't convinced we're going to get to 100% or 93% or anywhere close in 15 years. He's been an auto mechanic for 50 years. He specializes in vintage cars at his shop Proformance Motoring in Orange. And he's not a fan of Governor Newsom's mandate.
Well, I'm trying to think of a word besides ridiculous, but that's the first one that pops into my head. We can't even supply power for the state, much less power for recharging all of these cars. Not to mention the legality of telling people what they can and can't sell.
He calls Newsom's mandate a political stunt and says it's forcing drivers and the businesses that serve them to reimagine an industry too quickly. He calls electric vehicles the future, but forcing the future into the present could put the people who sell, fix, and fuel cars out of business.
You know, if the marketplace is allowed to work, the consumer will decide what the best way to go is. And then the other question is where the electricity is going to come from. A lot of the generators are natural gas fired. And if fracking is currently being cut down on, there won't be enough energy to run those, and solar won't be enough.
Greiner says he doesn't see it as a threat to his own business. He's close to retiring, and it could be a while before electric cars reach the vintage mechanic market. But gas station owner Taha Saleh in Porterville is 38, and he's supporting three kids.
I'm a younger owner, so 15 years from now, I'm still going to be young. It's like, what does that mean for my future? What does that mean for the value of my businesses that I've put my life savings into? You know, all of a sudden, it's different from different people, but especially for me in a smaller town where the land value isn't worth as much, the business is the driving force. I just felt like the value of my business just got crushed.
Saleh's life is built on gas. He started working his family's business as a kid. It's a convenience store with a few gas pumps just off the main road north of Bakersfield. Now he's running it, and he relies on the gas-powered cars passing through to put food on the table.
There are a lot of other industries that have kind of went through this where there's been some massive change, you know, and people have lost livelihoods for generations. And that's kind of our situation. It's my second generation. And I've always told my kids, hey, you know, go to college, get out of here, go do something, right? I got kids that are in college. And they always said, well, my backup plan is a store. And now it's something like this. I don't know if that's true anymore.
His story is actually more common than you might think. The vast majority of gas stations aren't owned by Chevron or Valero or Exxon. They're leased or sold to small business owners like Saleh, the same way that McDonald's stores are franchised. Even if Saleh did invest in the infrastructure needed to revamp his station, it's not as simple for him as pulling out pumps and putting in chargers. He's got several problems. Saleh can't legally sell electricity. That's only something the utilities can do. He can only sell the time someone spends at a charger. Also, EVs now have longer and longer driving distances, and he's never going to compete with the price of the electricity you're using to charge your car at home. And anyway, why go to his gas station when there's chargers at shopping malls and grocery stores, too? Saleh says he actually supports the mandate as an environmental policy, but as a business owner, he's not sure what he'll do next.
The first thing is minimizing investment, minimizing how much I put into it. Now that I know that there's a possible end game, and I don't know what my next move is, if it's going to be EV or... Obviously, investment is like, okay, this is the last set of pumps I'm going to buy. I'm not going to buy new pumps. It's almost like I got to squeeze every penny out. I got to maximize what I can get out of it and just get as much as I can out of it and hope for the best and hope, like, have another option, like a plan B.
But after an entire career built around his family's gas station, Saleh hasn't decided what plan B is yet. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Well, how worried should Taha Saleh be about the future of his gas station and the oncoming revolution of electric vehicles? And by the way, who made electric vehicles the big winner of the future car lottery? What happened to former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's hydrogen highway? Remember that one? Well, you know what? Arnold traded in his hydrogen Hummer for an electric Mercedes. Here he is showing it to Jay Leno on Jay's CNBC program.
This is probably the first in the world that a G-Wagon that actually had originally 500 horsepower, right, but the combustion engine.
Right.
So we took that out. I told them to convert one and to put an electric engine in. 3 months later,
California's current governor, Gavin Newsom, has set 2035 as the year the state will stop allowing the sale of gas-powered cars in California. But will you be ready for that? And what about hydrogen? Is the hydrogen fuel cell dead? Here to help answer some of these important questions is our car and tech guy, Todd Mesereau, TV producer, journalist, friend. Hey, Todd.
Hello, Steve.
So let's start with hydrogen cars. There are still some hydrogen cars around, right? I mean, are any car companies still making them, or is it? Do you think it's all over for hydrogen?
No, not yet. Hydrogen isn't dead. Hyundai has a brand new fuel cell SUV on the market, the Nexo. Honda makes the Clarity, then Toyota makes the Mirai. And also earlier this month, Hyundai, Toyota, and Shell were part of a new group of 11 companies formed to promote hydrogen development in the United States. So, you know, like they said in Monty Python, it's not dead yet.
What are the advantages and disadvantages, Todd, of hydrogen? Isn't hydrogen really flammable?
Well, hydrogen is flammable, but, you know, gasoline also burns as well. The biggest advantage of hydrogen is that burning it is super clean. There are zero tailpipe emissions from a fuel cell vehicle. Gasoline is toxic. You know, if you spill some gasoline, you don't want it on your skin, in the ground, or anywhere else. But hydrogen just dissipates into the air. The biggest disadvantage at the moment is the availability of refilling stations for your hydrogen car. Currently, California has 44 retail hydrogen stations up and down the state. One good thing, though, there probably aren't any lines at those stations. In 2020, less than 1,000 hydrogen fuel cell cars were sold in California.
When you're talking about hydrogen fuel cell and going to the station to fill up with hydrogen, is it like going to a gas station, Todd, and filling up with gasoline?
Yes, except the hydrogen is a pressurized gas. It's not a liquid.
But it takes less time to fill your tank with hydrogen and this pressurized gas than it, say, would take to charge your car if you went to a charging station for an electric vehicle.
Absolutely. Yeah, from that aspect, you know, it's similar. You pull into a hydrogen refilling station the same way you pull into a gas station, you know, undo the cap, connect the hose, and, you know, 5 minutes later or so, you're done. It can take, you know, up to 40 minutes, depending on the level charger, to get your electric vehicle up to even 80%. So if you're charging your electric car, you have to hope there's a nice restaurant nearby or a bench where you can sit and read a book or listen to your favorite radio station.
All right. I want to jump back to electric vehicles. Governor Newsom says no more gas-powered cars will be sold starting in 2035 in California. That's only 14 years away. It's like the snap of a finger. How far, Todd, have we come on that road? I mean, what percentage of cars being sold now in California are EVs?
Well, of the 27.7 million registered passenger vehicles in California, 1.2% are electric. So that's like 33,000 vehicles. So there's not very many at all. So in order to get from 33,000 vehicles to 27.7 million, that is quite a long journey. But the interesting thing is that people who have electric cars are huge fans. There was a November 2020 poll of electric car owners. 91% of them said they do not want to return to gas or diesel. They're sticking with electric. So I think the biggest hurdle to overcome is to just get people into an electric car, and then they seem to love them.
What about the socioeconomic byproduct of this, Todd? I mean, if you're somebody who doesn't make a whole lot of money, you're not going to be able to afford the car, but then you're not going to be able to find the charging station to charge the car to get you to work and back and all of those things. I mean, what are the issues with that?
Well, absolutely, the barriers to entry for the electric car market are much higher than an internal combustion engine car. I mean, you could buy a car that runs for $1,000. There's very little you can do with $1,000 in electric vehicle. You can't even buy a golf cart for that. In terms of reliability, though, electric cars are really dependable, and the upkeep and maintenance costs of electric cars versus internal combustion cars is much, much lower for electric cars. So once you're in an electric car, you're saving money, but the barrier to entry is actually purchasing the electric car in the first place. And there's no question that if we want a fully electric vehicle life in California, then the government is going to need to subsidize people who can't afford to buy it on their own.
And of course, skeptics will say, Todd, that, you know, let the market decide. Well, part of the market is already deciding because General Motors says it's going to stop selling anything but electric vehicles by, you guessed it, 2035. And they actually announced their intentions in a big way on Super Bowl Sunday.
Did you know that Norway sells way more electric cars per capita than the U.S.? Norway. Well, I won't stand for it.
That's actor Will Ferrell in an ad punching a globe and making clear about GM's commitment to electric cars. The giant automaker announced 20 new EVs in the next 2 years, which sounds like a lot. It is a lot. So, Todd, what kinds of vehicles are we talking about with General Motors?
The first one that's up for offer, and you can reserve yours now, is a Hummer, an all-electric Hummer. So, and you know, this is a strategy that Elon Musk, who we haven't mentioned yet, who has sort of forced the issue in a lot of ways with the success of Tesla, all electric vehicles. His theory was you start with the expensive one and the profits generated from the expensive car fund the development of the, you know, not as expensive cars. So the first Hummer that you can order will be delivered in the fall of this year, and it's $119,000. General Motors started with a, you know, a more affordable electric vehicle. The Bolt, I think, lists around $35,000 for a brand new electric four-door car.
And I wonder, you know, before we let you go, Todd, I mean, there's always the idea of Uber and Lyft, self-driving ride-hailing possibilities. I mean, that's all going to factor into this too, right?
100%. A lot of people, you know, they've come to think of cars as appliances. And it's less intrinsically an adored extension of your personality. And so, you know, one of these days we may return to some version of normal and the freeways are going to be jammed. I think most people at that point, if it was available, would probably prefer to let a robot drive so they can stream something on their phone or, you know, make a TikTok going to and from work. And, you know, there will always be diehards that want the pleasure of driving an internal combustion engine car, shifting gears, you know, going for a weekend drive or an old-fashioned road trip.
Todd Mesro, our car and tech guy. Todd, as always, nice to have you on.
Thank you, Steve. Great to talk with you.
So I remember when we were driving in your car, speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights day out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder, and I had a feeling that I belong. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
A year ago this week, we were calling it the novel coronavirus. It was new. The pandemic had just started taking hold of LA County with its first death and a scrambling to get it under control, some semblance of control. Since then, more than 22,000 Angelenos have died from COVID-19. The destruction from the pandemic is enormous. It is deeply personal. Their parents, grandparents, sons and daughters, brothers, sisters, friends, co-workers, neighbors, they each have stories. So every day this week on Greater LA, we're going to take you beyond the statistics to bring you a short story about one individual Southern Californian lost to this pandemic, as remembered by those who loved them. Today, the story of Sherry Walker of Aliso Viejo. She died back in July at the age of 69. Here's her daughter, Miley Walker, reflecting on her mother's colorful life and legacy.
She was definitely a hippie until the end. She had purple hair, just very, very fun. Just that free spirit, love, peacefulness that was so indicative of the late 60s, early 70s era, and that very much described her. She loved music, especially classic rock was huge for her. I could imagine her as this 18-year-old, just, she ran away from home for the weekend, like she snuck out. She lived in New York, so it wasn't across country or anything. It was, oh, let's go to this cool music festival. She attended Woodstock. We did those themed dress-up days at school, and we did 60s day, and I literally wore the shirt she wore to Woodstock, which on its own, really boring, generic striped shirt. I found that shirt going through her things, and I was so glad I found it. I grabbed that thing. My mom and my dad had a record store in Hawaii before I was born, and she would just talk about living in Hawaii, surrounded by music and just the beach and the surfers and all of that. It just sounded so magical, such this sense of community and sense of love. Now, definitely some drug use going on. She loved musicals, Wicked, which is why I have a cat named Elphaba now. Chorus Line, West Side Story, all of those she loved. One of the reasons I became a little drama kid was because she loved musicals. One of her favorites was, you know, the rendition of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the Hawaiian music rendition by Izzy. I can't think of his full name, but she loved that song. She loved Somewhere Over the Rainbow in general. We're a Wizard of Oz family.
My parents split up when I was really young. And after that, it was just the two of us. And so, you know, there were times where I was the one going, Mom, we have to be responsible and do this instead of this other thing, which she always rolled her eyes at. I always say we fought like mothers and daughters, but also we fought like friends, like sisters. Just no one can get under your skin in that same way.
The last few years of her life, one of the things she was doing was she worked with a family kind of as, I don't feel like babysitter is the right word, but she worked with a family and helped take care of the kids, picked them up from school, helped with homework. She was helping up until there was the pandemic and everyone had to stay home, and she would still text them and FaceTime. She was just someone they could talk to who wouldn't judge them, whether it's they had a bad time in school or any normal child thing. Sometimes I'll get in the car and I'll even have that moment of, I would be calling my mom right now. I took Elfie to the vet and I had that thought of, I'd love to call her and just talk, but she's not there. Sometimes I just feel this utter loss of this person, this utter light and love is no longer in the world, and my world is darker. I don't think she knew how many people in the world really love the hell out of her. Hug your loved ones, not just because you don't know when the last day will be, but just because they're your loved ones and they should be appreciated. If anyone's listening to this and touched by my mom's story, just go be kind. And that would make her really, really happy, I think.
That was Miley Walker. What a beautiful remembrance, talking about her mother, Sherry, who died of COVID-19 complications on July 24th of last year. She was just 69 years old. Thanks for the reporting, by the way, of KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo in that piece. Well, there is positive news, by the way, on the COVID front. With vaccine eligibility expanding here in California and across the nation, each day an increasing number of Angelenos and Southern Californians are becoming more protected from the virus. Maybe you're one of them. Well, we asked people who are fully vaccinated, how are you living life any differently than you have been for the past year? Monique says, now that I'm fully vaccinated, I'm going to travel to Texas to visit my 78-year-old dad. He is also fully vaccinated. All right, Monique. And Jenny says, I am headed back to the studio to collaborate with my fellow vaccinated dance colleagues after a year of lonely Zoom dancing. Oh, Zoom dancing, that's the worst. In my basement. All right, Jenny. How about you? Are you able to hug your mom or your grandmom or maybe somebody else for the first time in a year, starting to plan some trips? Let us know. Head to kcrw.com/greaterLA. While you're there, subscribe to the podcast too, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Guys, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Mike Newport, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Phil Richards all had hands on the show this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for the ear and time. Have yourself a great night.